Premier Radio Networks presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
And in a moment, our guest will be Dr. Rosemary Ellen Guiley. We will talk about magic, ETs, and yes, dreams. Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Ph.D., is an expert on paranormal, visionary, and spiritual topics. Rosemary has written 30-plus books on a wide range of subjects, from angels to zombies and everything in between. Her most recent book, The Encyclopedia of Vampires, Werewolves, and Other Monsters. She has written hundreds of articles for various publications and has been a longtime columnist for Fate magazine, writing on the frontiers of consciousness, psychic and paranormal realms, and, of course, ufology. Rosemary believes that our daily life is only a slice of a multidimensional universe. In her books and in her Gateways column for Fate magazine, she seeks to explore multidimensional realities to promote a better understanding of them. She's our guest tonight on Coast to Coast. Hello there, Rosemary. How are you?
Hi, George. I'm fine. It's a pleasure to be back.
Good to talk with you, too. You were our great guest on December, on Christmas Eve last year.
I got a lot of nice response to that on angels.
Angels, magic, dreams. We're going to talk to you about a lot of things tonight, and even ETs. What have you been doing lately, though? You're always busy.
I'm finishing up my encyclopedia on magic and alchemy, which will be out next year, and I've been very busy doing a lot on ufology for Fate magazine. In fact, I got bumped up from being columnist to consulting editor, and I spent quite a bit of time writing copy for a UFO special that has just been released from the printer, will be out in book form, in fact. And I have the pleasure of informing you that I'm the first person to let you know that you and Art Bell are listed on our list of the top 100 ufologists.
Hey, how about that? Yeah, Art's number one, and I'm about 98, right?
Well, very judiciously, we didn't rank things from 1 to 100, but they're all alphabetical.
Oh, let's see. Well, B is ahead of... Can you push me up just a little bit on the list, Rosemary? Hey, this book, The Encyclopedia of Magic and Alchemy, let's talk about this for a little bit. Do you believe in magic?
I do, and in fact, people practice magic every day, even if they don't realize it. Magic is about bringing things into manifestation, and the foundation of that is your thought. Your thought combined with your intention to get something done and your action upon that. And it's also about bringing in higher power. When we petition God or angels, even saints to help us, if we're Wiccan, maybe we call upon a pantheon of deities, but it's the projection of our will, our visualization and imagination, petitioning higher powers to bring change into the world. Everybody does it every day.
What is it about magic that fascinates all of us? I remember as a kid, for example, and there's a difference, too, between the magic performed by a magician and, you know, somebody you'd see at a show or a kid's program or something, and then what you're talking about, too, and that's the Encyclopedia of Magic and Alchemy. But what is it about magic in general, Rosemary, that has captured our imagination since we were kids?
Well, magic seems like a mysterious power where we can make something change instantly. In stage magic, we make things appear, we make things disappear, there's illusion involved, doing the seeming impossible. That's really what magic is about. But so is a miracle. So is an instantaneous healing. All of those things are forces that exist within us, powers that exist within us, to use our consciousness in a very constructive way. There are many types of magic. There is ceremonial magic, for example, which is really about spiritual purification, uniting your consciousness with the higher self and with God, and doing it through ritual and petitioning angelics, for example. There's folk magic, which involves formula for simple bewitchments or healings, good luck, avoiding bad luck, those sorts of things. magic is about really making the place that we live in better. And it's a way to accomplish things that for many of us it would seem to be miraculous because it happens instantly.
One of my favorite phrases used to be, it's magic time. You know, whenever anything special was happening.
Yes.
And I always loved that. And David Copperfield, is he more than, is he more of a, an illusionist as opposed to a magician?
Well, stage magicians like David Copperfield are illusionists. However, there is a type of stage magic known as bizarre magic, or actually it's an element of stage magic.
What is bizarre magic?
Bizarre magic.
What is that?
And what that involves is that many of the best stage magicians in the world find that sometimes there's more to magic than just trickery and illusion, that things happen, psychic things, for example, like maybe there's actual psychokinesis in something. Things happen that really can't be explained according to a stage magic manual.
The kind of magic performed by those who handled alchemy years ago. When I was a kid, I would read books on this, and I thought that they were mere trying to find how to make anything into gold. It was much more than that, wasn't it?
Well, here again, we have different kinds of the art. Alchemy is a science and an art, according to the traditional definition. There is the transmutation of base metals into gold, and that's the material aspect of alchemy.
Mm-hmm.
The spiritual aspect of alchemy is about changing the impure parts of yourself, your flaws, into a purer self. It's really a path of spiritual purification. Now, the best alchemists of the day, centuries ago, felt that really you could not have one without the other. You had no hope of performing material change if you didn't purify yourself spiritually first. However, there were lots of alchemists that were known as puffers, and they were the ones who just wanted the gold. You know, just, you know, take the lead, make the gold, make money.
What did they mean by the phrase black magic?
Black magic is the use of what would be called the infernal powers, and especially for either base material gain or to harm others. That would be calling upon, for example, demons to cause someone bad luck, misfortune, even in the view of some magicians, doing something like trying to find buried treasure, which is a very common element in a lot of the old magical textbooks called grimoires. That might even be considered black magic.
Is it bad to do that, to look for treasure?
Well, I don't think, technically, no, but the rituals that are given for this sort of thing almost always involve some sort of demonic entity rather than an angel.
The people who practice black magic, are they Satan worshippers? I mean, does it fall into that realm?
I don't think you can say that black magic is equated with Satanism because many people consider Satanism a form of religious practice.
True, true.
But black magic would be considered anything that is directed against another living thing's harm.
Like curses and things like that?
Curses. Wishing someone ill is a form of black magic. If you say, oh, I hate you and I hope you have bad luck, you're sort of practicing a very informal type of black magic.
I met a guy about a year ago here in Los Angeles who was from Haiti. And his mother practices voodoo. And when you first hear that, Rosemary, I mean, you know, the hair on the back of your neck kind of goes up a little bit because you just have this image of this real old woman and they're doing things. And, you know, she got a figurine and she's jabbing it with a pin and stuff. And I asked him about that and he said, no, that's not what we do. He said, voodoo is good magic. And he went on to explain that it was a loving, basically, religion that they believe in. And so I asked him, well, what's this thing about sticking pins into dolls that look like people? And he said, no, they got blown out of proportion by the media, that and Hollywood, years ago, everybody would be assigned a figurine or a doll that represented them, and what they would do is they would write their name on it, like your name would be Rosemary, my name would be George, on a little piece of paper. And he said the only way we could have it stick to the little figurine was we put a pin in it, and that's what it was. And I heard that, and I went, well, maybe voodoo isn't as evil as I thought. Have you checked into that?
Well, voodoo is a spiritual practice that involves communication with a pantheon of deities and the taking in of their power into one's own being. There are magical practices in every religious tradition, and some of it is spell casting. There are lots of different kinds of spell castings that are associated with voodoo. Now, magic essentially is a power, and in itself, it isn't bad or good. It depends on how it's used. Sticking pins into a doll or an effigy or a poppet is a universal practice, and it's rarely used for good, really. You stick pins in a doll when you it's a form of sympathetic magic, usually when someone is trying to harm another person.
Well, that's what I always thought, but he said that that's not what they practice voodoo for, at least on his end.
Well, I can't speak for him, and he may be providing an accurate picture of what he's familiar with.
Yeah.
But the practice of sticking pins in a poppet is not a very good form of magic traditionally,
especially
around the world, really.
Especially when it has my name attached to it.
We don't like that.
No, we don't. Yeah, could you call prayer and positive thinking a form of magic?
I believe that they are. A lot of magic involves very elaborate rituals, but I consider them simplified forms of magic. For example, in prayer, we are projecting our visualization, our imagination, which is something we desire to come into being, along with our will, our desire to do something to bring it into being. And we're calling upon a higher power, God, to bring change into the world. So we pray for ourselves and we pray for other people. This is really a form of magic. It's bringing about change through an agency other than just us into being.
Do you think Merlin was really a real and indeed a magician, or just a figment, a myth?
It's really hard to know about Merlin. There's so much legend about him. It's quite likely that a lot of the legend was based on a real person or perhaps several persons. But the figure of being a wizard or a cunning man or a wise man or a wise woman, someone who had magical ability, these sorts of individuals have existed by various names throughout time. And they have psychic ability. They have a natural ability to heal. I think some people are sort of naturally endowed for magical arts, while other people have to work at it more to learn. So someone like Merlin technically probably existed and could still exist today.
Now, you talk about your new book, The Encyclopedia of Magic and Alchemy. Encyclopedia, to me, connotates that you've got a listing of different things. Am I correct there?
Yes, it's A to Z, and I cover a lot of aspects of magical ritual, different types of magic, famous people, famous alchemists, the processes of alchemy. It's been a fascinating research project.
Was Harry Houdini a magician or just merely an escape artist?
Well, I think you'd find some divided opinions there. He was primarily a stage magician, but he had an uncanny ability for getting himself out of locks, and this ability so impressed a lot of his peers that some wondered whether or not there was something else going on there.
Like what?
Well, he may have had some unusual ability to use mind over matter, for example.
Oh, really?
But nobody really knows for certain. He was very interested in the occult. He actually set out to debunk a lot of the occult and became very interested in it on his own.
As a matter of fact, I think before he died, he told his wife, Bess, that he'd try to come back, and they worked on a sign. He had given her a code, and she went to see mediums. He was going to see mediums in the beginning because he wanted to find his mother again, basically, and communicate with her. And unsuccessfully, and he would go to these charlatans and these fraud mediums, and it would drive him crazy. But I think when he died, before he died, he gave his wife a code, and I think she was at a seance once, and the person, the medium, indeed mentioned the code, and I think she just, broke down in tears and felt that somebody had finally communicated with Harry Houdini. It was a great story.
It was. That was, the medium was Arthur Ford. And it was a strange case, though, because later on she recanted. And there are still a lot of debates going on today as to whether or not Ford actually got the message or perhaps worked in cahoots with Bess to, make a case for it. I think that he really did get it.
I think he was in my hometown of Detroit, of course, way before I was born, when he conducted one of his experiments, and then he got punched in the stomach. I'm pretty sure it was in Detroit. I'm going to have to check on that again. And he always used to pretend he had a cast iron stomach, and he took punches from people. Well, this time he got sucker punched, and he didn't tighten up yet. And I guess, he ruptured his spleen or something, and then he died.
I think, I think peritonitis set in or something like that. It was very tragic the way that happened.
Rosemary, and when we come back at the half, I want to talk about your work in ufology and also a little bit of dreams, and we'll take phone calls with you next hour. But is this book, The Encyclopedia of Magic and Alchemy, when will it be ready?
It will be out next spring. Next spring. Just finishing it up now, and then it'll be going to press later this year.
You are pretty prolific. You got more than 30 books out there already?
I do, yes. Many of them encyclopedias. I'm just driven by my own desire to learn about all of these mysterious things.
When I first interviewed you in 1997, it's going to be 8 years around September, October, as a matter of fact. How many books had you had out by then? You remember?
It would have been, I think, under 20.
You had Encyclopedia of Dreams out, because that was our very first interview.
Yes.
We did that. And how did you get involved in that, the dreams and the breaking down of what they might mean?
Very early in my life, I got interested in dreams because of psychic dreaming in my family. My mother especially had precognitive dreams. For her, it was a pretty unpleasant experience because she'd dream about unhappy things happening, usually people dying that she knew. And this stimulated my interest in dreams because to me, in childhood, it seemed magical, really, that you could dream the future that would really happen. So I started reading about all sorts of psychic things and paranormal things when I was in my early teens. I started experimenting with my dreams as to whether or not I could send messages to other people via dreams, travel in my dreams, see in the future.
You can do all of that, can't you?
You can do all of that and more.
Yeah.
So it's been a lifelong pursuit.
It's very, very powerful. If you know how to do it and tap into it, I think your dream state is where you do just about all your creative work.
A lot of it, certainly, and we certainly have spiritual experiences. I think a lot of ET experiences take place in the dream state. It's a medium where we can have experiences that are inaccessible to us or difficult during waking consciousness.
Well, we'll do that when we come back. We'll talk about dreams and ufology because Rosemary Ellen Guiley has handled both. Now she's the consulting editor and primary writer on ufology for Fate magazine, so we shall do that. And then we'll take phone calls in the final hour. We're not going to necessarily interpret specific dreams, but you can talk to her about what they might mean, okay? So, for example, if you are running and running and running and you're not going anywhere, she'll be able to tell you generally what that means, what the dream's trying to tell you. We can do that. I'll be back in a moment. Her website linked up with her name, but for those of you who may be just driving around right now, just remember this. It's www.fatemagazine.com. visionaryliving.com. Very simple. Visionaryliving.com.
Subscribe to After Dark. Call toll-free 1-888-727-5505. Premier Radio Network presents Coast to Coast AM with George Norrie.
Well, we'll talk with Rosemary about ufology in addition to dreams, but in an upcoming issue of the After Dark newsletter, which you'll get when you subscribe, a special edition on UFOs, the guest editor, Lex Lonehood, and you will love it. Take advantage of it. Call 1-888-727-5505. That's 1-888-727-5505, or go online at coasttocoastam.com. Rosemary, I have always been fascinated about dreams and the subject of them, and you know, you and I have talked over the years about what certain things mean and things like that, but what is it about a dream that, you know, creates the intuition that some people have, that they're able to possess?
I think that when we dream, our mind is freed of the constraints of waking consciousness. And many of those constraints are self-imposed, ideas about things that we think we can know and can't know. The intuition has a freer rein when we sleep. Dreams are really a mirror of truth to us. For one thing, they tell us the truth about our feelings, about how we think we're doing in the world. They tell us the truth about situations we're in, things that we're ignoring, factors we're ignoring. And they also help us see into a broader world. We can see into the future. We can have experiences in other realms. We can visit ourselves in past lives, even contact with otherworldly beings, with angels, with ETs. When you get into the spiritual aspects of dreams, it's just fascinating territory.
Are you convinced, like I am, that there's like a wireless matrix out there that everybody's connected to?
I do believe that, and I have for quite some time, because I've had so many extraordinary dreams myself. Whenever I want vision or guidance, I ask for a dream to help me. And I do a lot of traveling in my dreams, you know, traveling to other realms. And I think that dreams are sort of like a like you said, like a wireless network that I think it connects all sentient beings.
I see. I think you can concentrate on someone, for example. And I think you use it for positive. You can use it for bad and negative, but the negative comes back and gets you five times worse than whatever you did. So that's not advisable. But I think you can sit back, concentrate, go to sleep, let your brain take over, and send thoughts, good thoughts to people about certain things. And sure enough, you know, within a few days, all of a sudden, you get a call from them or you meet, and there's just something there. There really is. It's amazing how it works, Rosemary.
And the ancients knew this, too. Dreams were very important universally. Since ancient times, as a way of doing this, of sending thought and intention, asking the favor of the gods, for example, in monotheism, God. People have known about this power for millennia.
No doubt about that, and they will continue. Now, how many times do we dream in a night?
Most of us will dream probably about five or six times during the course of a night, but some people have documented up to 20 dreams. And we remember very little of that. We tend to remember what we were dreaming just before we woke up. So unless we wake up a lot during the course of a night, we're likely not to remember so many individual dreams.
Why do some people have night terror dreams?
Some of it may be due to psychological anxiety, stresses during the day, post-traumatic stress syndrome, psychological cases, even physical illness can cause night terrors. But there's a supernatural type of night terror, too, which in earlier times people literally said were caused by demons. Demons or witches who came and sat on your chest at night and made you have bad dreams. There's a phenomenon called the hag syndrome.
Oh, yes.
Which many people have experienced at least once in their lives, where you feel an evil presence in the room. Maybe it comes and sits on the bed or paralyzes you, and you're very terrified with this.
This entire area of sleep has had some people call this program, and they don't like to go to sleep. They're afraid to go to sleep. That's got to be horrible.
I do know people who experience that. Sometimes people who are very sensitive psychically have a lot of experiences at night that are unsettling to them. They might be visited, for example, by the dead or by different kinds of beings. We're more open to that, I think, when we sleep. And so this can be quite unsettling to individuals, especially if they don't know how to deal with it.
Well, we'll get back to dreams when we take calls next hour. In addition to everything you've been doing, you are now the consulting editor for Fate magazine and the primary writer on ufology. What conclusions have you come to about UFOs?
I think that many of these experiences are interdimensional. I do believe that we have been visited, we are being visited. There are probably ETs among us in some sort of form now, maybe perhaps a shape-shifted form. But I also think that a lot of our experiences, our contact experiences, are interdimensional. That is, doorways open up between universes or realms. And there may not be hardware flying around us so much as interdimensional craft and beings. And I think that's one reason why physical evidence has been so hard to come by.
Well, you may be right. Also, though, it's very possible that if they are physical in some case, they may be able to come through these other dimensions, through these portals, these wormholes, however they've been able to bend time and space.
Yes, I think both time and space are very, very malleable. I think that we're probably being visited by a variety of races who have a variety of intents, just like we do. Some are benevolent, some are interested in us for research purposes or study. Some might have harmful intent to us, want to take resources from the planet, use us as study subjects. That's certainly been documented in so many of the abduction cases.
Do you think they're taking humans and not returning them?
I suspect that that is the case.
Oh, my.
That perhaps people who go missing may have wound up on some ET agenda.
On some planet somewhere or whatever has happened. I sure hope it doesn't end up like that Twilight Zone movie To Serve Man where they ended up getting eaten.
Well, that's certainly a scary prospect. But, you know, we can't rule out the possibility that there are races out there who would look at us like we look at animal life as something to provide sustenance.
Oh, my. Are there, like, vampires out there?
I think that there are vampiric ET entities who would need blood, body parts, DNA for their own sustenance or perhaps even to market. And these have certainly been put forward by people who have had contact of varying sorts, people who get channeled messages. I think it's some territory that we really can't ignore. On the other hand, I think that there are positive experiences in benevolent ETs who have made themselves available to help people. We certainly have plenty of experiences on that end of the spectrum, too.
What do you think these cattle mutilations might be, in as much as no blood has been found on the scene? Maybe they've been sucked dry.
They certainly seem to be, and it might be, I don't really have a good answer for that, and I don't think anybody really does. Many of those animal mutilations have been linked to areas and waves of UFO activities. There are a type of vampire attacks, for example, that have been documented in South America called the Chupa Chupas, named after the chupacabras.
Chupacabra, sure.
Because they seem to be vampiric in nature, that people are attacked by these red lights that beam down from craft, and they suffer a wasting away illness. There have been reports of people who have been found dead and allegedly drained of blood, or at least a lot of their blood. Are there vampiric ETs doing that to animals and people? There seems to be evidence for that. And when you look at folklore, actually, there are a lot of similarities between real vampires and some ETs.
Well, that's kind of a scary thought, Rosemary, that these things may be going on out there.
I think we have to examine these things very closely and be open to all possibilities. I think that we are soon going to have irrefutable evidence of contact. I believe that there has been a lot of cover-up of information. There are active disinformation campaigns.
For what reason, though? I believe that, too. And as a matter of fact, Monday night, first hour, Dr. Stephen Greer will be our guest. He's going to talk about the Peter Jennings UFO special, and he's got some pretty harsh words about that. He, of course, believes we've been visited, too. But why the non-disclosure? I mean, what are they afraid of?
I think that bottom line, it's fear and panic on part of the public. For a government to say that we're being visited by aliens who may or may not have hostile intent toward us, who have technology that's beyond our capability, and they can't do anything about it and probably can't defend us against it, that's an admission that no governing body wishes to make, and it's better to try and deep-six the evidence and ridicule people who have contact.
Would they also be concerned about losing control if they told us, you know, there are beings out there, they're intelligent, they visited us? Then what do we think about the foundation of government, the foundation of structure? Maybe we just wouldn't care anymore and we'd be free, you know, mentally free.
Well, certainly a lot of things would suddenly be up for grabs. We'd have social controls, political controls, religious ideas. All of these things would suddenly be thrown into question. And I think that it's certainly logical to think that we might have social chaos as a result.
Did you ever come across any subterranean or in water type UFO reports?
Well, subterranean, yes, and in fact, some of those are connected to the reptilians or reptoids, and this is an area of increasing contact. More and more people are coming forth with their stories of being in contact with reptilian entities, many of whom seem to have been living underground for quite some time. They have stellar origins, but have developed for a long time as kind of a parallel race to human beings. Now, the interesting thing about the reptilian contact is that an increasing number of people are saying that they're positive contact, not just negative.
See, I believe that we've been seeded by extraterrestrials. Always have believed that.
I do, too. I think that the Earth is one of many planets that has been seeded for a variety of reasons, perhaps for experimental purposes, to breed certain qualities, for example. I think that we were seeded to be a very strong developed race. There's what we call the spark of divinity within us, is the seeding of these higher powers. And I'm not really convinced we're doing a very good job of developing that.
Well, you may be right about that. What would Christianity say about UFOs?
Well, Christianity has not really addressed the ET and UFO connection very well. I had a lengthy interview with Guy Malone in Roswell, who's one of the leading spokespersons on this topic. Christianity tends to either demonize ETs and ufologies, it's all demonic illusion, or it's conveniently ignored. There really aren't very many ministers, I think, who are prepared to deal with questions on this topic. And yet we have connections between extraterrestrials and angels.
See, I think a lot of people have confused, and even though you and I both agree in angels, I think a lot of people, though, have confused these ETs for angels or angels for ETs. Either way, I think there's been some confusion there in their sightings.
I think so, and I think we've had this confusion throughout history. It's quite possible that beings that were identified as angels a long time ago were actually extraterrestrials, and arguments have been made along these lines for quite some time. And that may even be the case today. In fact, I did an informal study of how do people experience ETs in dreams several years ago with a psychologist and a fellow member of the International Association for the Study of Dreams. We asked people what their dreams were that they identified as ET dreams and why they interpreted them the way they did. I've also collected a lot of similar material from people who have had angel encounters in dreams. And I found it very interesting that if you took the labels of angel and ET out, it was very difficult to tell one from the other in terms of the characteristics of the dreams.
Well, you know, when we hear about the events at Fatima and with those three children, all of whom have now died, with Sister Lucia being the last just recently, they talked about the sun coming down close. People saw that. Now, we all know that scientifically, if the sun came down that low, this planet would scorch. I'm beginning to wonder if what they saw was a huge craft that they thought was the sun.
Well, that certainly would be my interpretation of it, too. Brilliant lights that come down from the sky have been recorded in all kinds of literature since ancient times, including prophetic literature, and that may very well be the real explanation.
That would very well be, too. Rosemary, of everything you've investigated in the field of ufology, is there anything that really just fascinated you the most?
I think that ufology is the frontier where a lot of things are coming together. We've had interest, for example, the whole New Age area where we became interested in developing our powers of intuition, psychic ability, healing ability, interest in angels, interest in connecting to the greater whole of things. I think that all of these strands of interest and study are really going to come together in ufology, and that's where we're going to find a lot of answers, because that's what's going to give us the big picture of where we fit into things on a cosmic scale.
And you mentioned that you thought that maybe we'd find out some more things soon. How will that occur, if you had to guess? Is it going to be direct? Because I still don't think the government's going to come out and tell us.
Not likely at all. I think one can make an argument for measured disclosure, you know, things sort of being leaked out in a gradual way. In fact, a lot of people feel that about the Jennings show, that this was another step in that process. But I think that more people are going to have their own direct experience, and that's something that nobody can control. No organization, no religion can control irrefutable direct experience. This is going to happen increasingly to individuals, and that's when people are going to start wanting to find answers on their own, not look to institutions for all the answers, but find their own answers, find their own truth, and make decisions according to their own increasing empowerment.
All right, Rosemary, top of the hour, be one more hour left. We'll open up the phone lines. I'll tell you what, magic questions, ufology questions, dream questions, all of those will be very proper. VisionaryLiving.com is Rosemary Ellen Guiley's website, and her new book she's working on, of course, is called The Encyclopedia of the Magic and Alchemy. But she's got a lot out there, Encyclopedia of Dreams, Encyclopedia of Ghosts and Spirits, Encyclopedia of Vampires, Werewolves, and Other Monsters as well. So stick with us. Phones are ready for you right now. I'm George Norrie, back in a moment on Coast to Coast AM.
Heart won't break in two. My love is especially for you. It's the same every night when I turn off the light.
Find out more about tonight's guest. Log on to coasttocoastam.com.
In the morning.